Hello and welcome to the Musician's Toolbox. I'm Angela.
And I'm Andrew.
And we are so excited that you could join us today. The Musician's Toolbox, if this is your first time here, is for musicians, both professional and aspiring, that are wanting to improve on their skills so that they are a better musician, a more well-rounded musician. And we don't discriminate against genres. If you are a jazz musician or a pop musician or a classical musician, we believe that anything you find here is going to be useful for you. Maybe not everything, but definitely the tools that we use as musicians, we use for life as well. So hopefully they help you become a better person past your music as well. We're really excited for our guest here today, and Andrew's going to introduce her.
Yes, today we will be talking with Cindy Vizas. She is a national speaker, author, and performer who trains individuals, groups, and executives on emotional and mental resilience. She has earned a bachelor's degree from BYU emphasizing leadership communication, as well as a master's of science from the University of Idaho, where she studied the power of self-transformation. With a passion for coaching clients to transformation, she has spent the past 20 years bringing individuals and groups to better ways of viewing themselves. And she has also always loved music. She's played the piano and the ukulele. And for a few years ago, she recorded an album, solo piano album, that has been used for therapeutic and relaxing settings. And lastly, she is also a fellow podcaster and hosts two internationally top-ranked podcasts. One is Concussion, There's Hope, and the second one is The Business Nightingale Project, and we'll talk a little bit about those in the interview. And both are intended to bring hope and reduce suicide. And so we are just so grateful that you would join us today, and we look forward to talking to you.
It is so exciting to be here. I love your project. I love what you're doing for so many people. So it's really a privilege. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So I know I just read your bio, but I feel like there's lots of time that has gone on that we may have missed something. So is there anything, any experiences, relationships, or any other experiences that you find particularly interesting in your life?
What a good question. So yes, aren't we all composites of experiences? Mm-hmm. We're all composites of mentors who have shaped our lives and have helped us. And as I think about all of the different experiences that I've had on stages and touring and doing different kinds of things, I have to go back to the very first music teacher that I ever had. She was a piano teacher in third grade. And I remember we had moved to a tiny little town in Nebraska, and I wanted to be a ballerina. And my mother tried to find a dance teacher or a dance studio, and she couldn't find any. It was a little tiny town, like 600 people. Mm-hmm. And so she finally came to me and said, Cindy, I'm so sorry, but I did find a piano teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I started my piano lessons in third grade, and that teacher believed in me. I was such a timid person initially. I just was so shy, and I had no confidence in myself. And it was so hard those first couple of weeks when you're having to put both hands together, right? It's like, who made up this, right? And I remember my mother at the time she came to me and she said, Cindy, if you will practice with both hands together for 30 minutes, every time I will pay you a quarter. I didn't get an allowance, and so I was like, I will take the quarter. And so it took about 3 weeks, but then I was hooked, and then I couldn't stop playing. And I would play for, even as a child, I would play for several hours. And then I remember in sixth grade I started flute, and my her name was Honey Wiseman. I wish I could still find her. She challenged me because she recognized talent, and she forced me to do solos and all different kinds of opportunities. And then in seventh grade, I mean, as I think of these people and mentors, and it's really each individual can make such an impact. My seventh grade science teacher gave me guitar lessons just for a month so that I could get started, and so on. And then my band teacher in high school, as he heard some of my original songs and singing, he said, let's do a community concert. just to feature you, and we'll back you with the jazz band, and just so on. And so as I now I'm an adult and I look back, I think that's what fuels my life and my choices and my decisions, because all of these experiences came from individuals who made such a difference in my life. And isn't that really the way it is for all of us?
Definitely.
Yeah. So, I was a little unsure to ask this question, because we've been kind of asking a lot of people this question, but I think with your background in self-transformation and self-improvement, I think you'll have some new things that we can think about. So as musicians, there's lots of negative self-talk, comparison, and also other demotivating thoughts that, I mean, I think has plagued me and for many other musicians. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Do you have any experiences that you don't mind sharing about that that might help something, whether that's with a client or with yourself?
Absolutely, and what a profound topic, because if we can learn to wrestle the thoughts in our mind into the patterns and highways that we choose, our life is different. So you can have two individuals starting out at the beginning of the game, and they're equally gifted, and they're equally devoted and intent on self-expansion, but one is plagued with negative thoughts. Absolutely negative thoughts. And then you cast that forward 30 years, and who will have progressed further? So this is a passion of my life, and that's why I coach the way I do, and I've done all of the different things that I've done. So the analogy that I give, it's not even an analogy, it's a true story, but my husband and I were driving through, I won't say which state, because, you know, all 50 states are wonderful, but it had long freeway, or long highway, and it was really boring. And so all of a sudden, so we're driving, it's been hours, and then I discover as the passenger that our car is like now on the opposite side of the road. Unfortunately, it's a lonely highway. Nobody's there. But I'm like, honey, what are you doing to my husband? And he's like, oh my goodness. And so he comes back onto the correct side of the highway. And he goes, I was just looking at those mountains off in the distance because everything else is so boring, right? But he said, I thought I was driving straight. And as we talked about that then, because he's a mental health counselor, and so he works with people as he tries to help them have their thoughts be straight, right? But what we look at and focus on, we drive towards. And so if we are having this kind of this pandemic internally of these negative thoughts, what are we to do? And so if I may I share something that can be helpful?
Sure.
It's from Dr. Ellis, and it's rationally motivated behavior. And what he did is he was super shy, and his story and his life is pretty interesting, but he developed, was kind of the early father of what's called the A plus B equals C equation for our thoughts. And so he looked at A, which is your activating event, and then B, which is your belief about the event, leads to C, your consequential emotion. So let's say that because of the pandemic, you've lost your job, and so you're losing your apartment. You're having to move out. So the activating event is you're losing your apartment. And be thinking as you're listening to this, as a musician, what might this be, right? But so then your belief is, this is really bad, that I'm losing my apartment and I'm having to move out. So your consequential emotion is going to be what? It's going to be negative. It's going to be difficult. You may start challenging yourself, might even challenge your own worth, right? I'm such a lousy person. Look at this. I'm being kicked out, etc. Albert Ellis talked about how your belief is what links to your emotions. And so if you changed your belief and said, you know what, right now this looks really bad, but I bet I'll be in a better place in 6 months. I'll show you, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you have this empowering feeling. And so it washes over you, and it starts, you know, you just keep asserting to yourself, you know, I'll show you, I'm going to be in a better place in 6 months. And so psychological classes will teach you self-fulfilling belief, et cetera. So when you are being plagued with these negative thoughts and these comparisons, how might that be for a musician? I remember as a music major, I was at Arizona State University studying music, and I studied music at Colorado State and Brigham Young University. And I remember being in a practice room at ASU, and you're working, and then you hear the person next door. Oh my goodness, right? So how would you use that A plus B equals C? It really is the activating event is still, you're just listening to somebody completely neutral experience, but your belief about the situation. So we could say, man, I'm never going to measure up. I'm never going to be able to make it. Or your belief is, you know what? I'm just going to work harder. I'm going to show that person. I'm going to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And not in an adversarial way, but in kind of like games on. Mm-hmm. And your consequential emotion is completely different. So your A plus B equals C becomes a very powerful tool. So I invite the listeners to, even as they're listening later, to listen to what we're talking about, but then at the end, pull out a piece of paper, write in big letters across the top of the page, A plus B equals C. And then be thinking about a recent event where maybe there's been a comparison or some negative self-talk, or maybe it's been persistent throughout life, but find one event and then write that under the activating event, write what the negative belief has been, write then the equal sign, here's my consequential emotion, here's how I'm feeling. And now go brainstorm with a couple of friends. How can you change that and write it again? The activating event is whatever this is. And then what's my, I'll show you, or whatever, this is really good, I'm going to be in a better place. Write that literally down on the paper. And then write your equal sign and your consequential emotion, and you're going to discover self-empowerment. And when we feel self-empowered, we conquer. So then you can just tear off the top half, shred it, and then put that on your mirror. Super powerful as we are wrestling with those demotivating thoughts. We get to be alpha of our mind, and we all can once we discover how to.
Something for me that's been a struggle, and I think some other people might struggle with it too, is how do you get out of the spiral of thinking of not being able to change the B, or not being able to know what the B is. I mean, you just kind of beat yourself up. How do you get out of that spiral?
Super good question. So the story that comes into my mind, first of all, the first answer is we start thinking about this, period. We just plant the seed of, wow, I heard this, like, I hate math, but it's this math equation, right?
Yeah.
But A plus B equals C, and so you just start thinking about it, and that softens the ground for the seed to be planted for it eventually to grow. Then number two, you start looking for examples, because once the mind can see something, it can then bring it about. But if we haven't seen it before, we don't know how to bring it about. It's how we learn to ride a bike, right? We see other people riding the bike, et cetera. So a really great example, Dr. Covey, Stephen R. Covey, has written about, is he was on the subway coming home. He had a really super tough day. And then soon after he'd gotten on, there's this father had gotten on with his kids. And you may have heard this story, but to me, it's powerful. And the kids are just like throwing things and bumping things and being rude. And the father just sits there and he puts his head back and closes his eyes. Well, the natural person's going to go, what kind of dad are you? Are you going to teach your kids manners? Mm-hmm. So Dr. Covey's starting to feel hot under the collar, so to speak, right? And he finally leans over to the father to say, you need to do something about your kids. And the man turns to Dr. Covey. He's opened his eyes and he turns to him and he says, I know. And I'm paraphrasing, but he says, I know. We just left the hospital where the mother just died. And I don't know what to tell them. All of a sudden, the whole house of cards that Dr. Covey thought he had so well defined in his head came crumbling down. He's instantly flooded with compassion. And he says something to the man along the lines of, what can I do to help? So here's the exact same activating event. But now he's been given additional insight. And as a reflexive action, his belief now changes, it shifts, and compassion, which is the consequential emotion, floods. So sometimes as we're recognizing I am kind of in the spiral, it can be super helpful to go to other people and say, can you help me identify different beliefs about this situation? And then also start noticing, like reading stories. What was it, like if you have a favorite movie, what was the turnaround for that particular individual? There are so many different ways that we can do this, but it is a slippery slope as we're doing the demotivating thoughts. One of the other things that is truly a profound kind of stop guard, like we have rivers that if they're going to overflow their banks, we put up dams, right? Or big walls. We do things to stop the river so that we can then turn it into a positive thing. Something else that is super effective is learning how to do that through, have you heard of the Calm app? There are mindfulness apps, and I've downloaded probably 5 different ones. I don't work for Calm. I don't get any money from them, but they are my favorite. And so studies have shown sometimes if we go through the back door, if we go through the front door and we say, I need to stop having these thoughts, right? These are negative thoughts. They're toxifying my system. We know from science, the little phrase, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Well, I don't like that equal word if I'm trying to get rid of toxifying thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And so how can I not do this in a way that I will get greater resistance? So in summary, you go in through the back door. You go in through a way that your brain doesn't even detect that you're attacking its wonderful toxic thoughts, right? So by doing a moment of mindfulness every day, studies have shown that it quiets the chatter until we can eventually get good enough and strong enough at then starting to deflect the toxic thoughts by simply shutting off the chatter and doing mindfulness. So the just in summary also, we have 2 steps when we're changing. The first thing is we have to learn how to move from before we can learn how to move to. So that moving from, it's very helpful to use like a mindfulness app. We're moving from thoughts that aren't helpful. We're not worrying right now how to do the thoughts that are. But once we practice that, say for like 30 days, and we start getting comfortable moving from what has been so familiar, then we can start moving to new, which then is that A plus B equals C, and it can become more intuitive. So if we ignore the moving from part and we try to move right to the moving to part, it's too foreign and our brain will reject it. So going through the back door sometimes can be very helpful.
That's kind of why I think often toxic, it seems, I hadn't ever put this together, but just from what you said, it seems like, I know when I've struggled with this in the past, there's almost this addiction to the negativity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because it is such a close, strong emotional reaction to what a positive one would be. And so they're really easy to confuse the two of them, and feel like you're, because it's this strong reaction, you're still there. So the reprogramming step in the middle is so necessary.
Right. That's really well said. And the image that comes into my head is like, if you're a deep sea diver, which I've never done before, but I understand the science, right? So if you go way, way down and you come up too fast, you get what's called the bends, right? Mm-hmm. And there's all the science behind the oxygen and your bloodstream and all of that. But the point is, don't come up so fast.
Yeah.
So as we do and bring into our life gentle moments like the Calm app or some of these other mindfulness, and there's free mindfulness things that you can find online too. But as you're making it a practice, we like that word, right? As musicians, that's how we expand, right? But as we're making this a practice of 10 minutes of this, it's kind of bringing us slowly from that tighter, more restrictive energy of negative self-thought into the lighter and brighter as we get closer and closer to the, you know, the top of the water level. So I love that you bring that out.
It's also similar to burn victims. When you've had like third degree burns and they're I've heard that they used to think the best solution was to just, you know, if you had cloth stuck to it or something from the incident, would be to just tear it off, you know, rip off the Band-Aid. And they finally started just doing little by little and found that even though it took much longer, a sustained pain that was lower was less stressful to the patients than that excruciating, you know, 3 seconds. So
yes,
learning how to be kind to ourselves and realize that that is necessary on physical, mental, emotional, all of those, not just from a physical perspective.
And I also,
Well, I was just going to say, because each one listening to this program and every one of your episodes is needed. Mm-hmm. Every single one of your listeners is needed and is valuable, and their music is needed, and their thoughts and their heart and every reason why they are being a musician, that is needed. And sometimes in the hollow room of our practice rooms, when we're by ourselves and we're wrestling against a certain passage or whatever it might be, sometimes we can forget that we in our humanity with our gifts are needed. And so that's why these conversations that you're having with all of your different guests are so valuable and so important, because each listener is needed on this planet. And so thank you for what you're doing.
And for me, I also like separating it, because when you are down in the depths, it kind of seems like it's so hard to get to the being better. And it's a lot easier to separate it, like you said, like removing it and then figuring out where to go. Because first you have to go away from it. Like, and so I just like how it makes it more achievable. And yeah, yeah. So.
And real.
Yeah.
Right? Because yeah. That's like nature. Like mm-hmm. we can, if we were observant, we could solve so many of our inner mm-hmm. intrapersonal issues by just observing nature. So when we plant a little seed, just this the other day we had some relatives visiting, and my daughter-in-law cut open an apple and one of the seeds had sprouted. Wow. So she brought it to me and I planted it. And in 2 weeks it's already 3 inches tall. Mm-hmm. It's my little baby. I love it, right?
Yeah.
But if we could realize that any element of worthy growth is like that little apple seed. It starts in this tiny, dark little space. But if we allow ourselves space and time and nutritive love and self-talk, every single time those worthy seeds will grow. But it is that slow and natural pace that you just described so well, Andrew. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I also kind of, since you're so well educated in self-transformation, I kind of want to talk about that a little bit more. Because I think also for musicians, kind of going along with what we talked about, sometimes we neglect to take care of ourselves. And it's hard to make music and share music with others when we're not taking care of ourselves. From the people that you have coached and the things that you have studied, what are some things that we can do to either take care of ourselves or to notice that we're not taking care of ourselves? And it might be something that we've already talked about, but can you just kind of adapt it to that question?
Sure. There's two things that come to mind. And the first is a self-care journal. We'll talk about that in just a moment, but also sound baths. And so the first one is you wouldn't even need to call it a self-care journal. It's your success journal. It is important for us to be aware of areas of improvement, because otherwise we'd be cocky mm-hmm. and egotistical. So it's not wrong to notice I have areas of improvement. What becomes difficult is if that moves into whipping ourselves because we have areas of improvement. Mm-hmm. So one of the simplest ways that we can kind of come in through the back door is to keep a success journal. And every night before you go to bed, do you write down, and this isn't being fluffy, mm-hmm. frou-frou, mm-hmm. you're literally just giving yourself permission to notice at least one thing that you did well that day. And so every day before you go to bed, you can get a 25-cent little spiral notebook from a local store. But at least one thing that you authentically did well, you're giving yourself permission to notice that in addition to areas of self-improvement that can be made, honestly, there are areas of good things that you are doing. And it might be as simple, but as meaningful as you held open the door for an elderly person as they were going into a place of whatever it might be. Or maybe you're having to go to the dentist and you're super nervous because you're having to have a tooth extraction. But even in the midst of your nervousness, you smiled at the person that was taking your name. It's these tiny moments that keep us humane and wonderful. And these are the things that get overlooked. And so the first thing for self-care can be to just keep a success journal every night. And can you imagine 20 years from now bequeathing that to your posterity? Mm. It has been said in three generations, if you don't keep a record of your life, you will be forgotten as if you never existed. Isn't that astonishing? Mm-hmm. So if you started right now just keeping a success journal of these tiny acts of kindness, or you know what? I didn't feel like practicing, but I did what I had set out to do. That is a triumph. Your heart and your soul and your mind and your whole being need to be able to be recognized in your success. It's not just your self-improvement, you know, the things that you do honestly need to improve in. So that's the first one. The second one I learned from my son, Andrew. You know my son, Stephen, and he is a missionary right now. But when he was 7 years old, I came downstairs and he was on the couch and quiet, nothing. Nothing was happening. He was just on the couch. He was laying down on the couch. And I said, are you okay? He goes, yes. Quiet. No sound. Are you sure? Yes. I'm like, well, what are you doing?
Something suspicious here.
I know, right? And he said, and I don't remember his exact words, but it was something to the effect of, I'm just enjoying the quiet. And I started noticing. I would come downstairs. It wasn't every day, but there would just be these times when I'd say, are you doing okay? Forgetting, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I'm just enjoying the quiet. And I started noticing the supreme amount of peace in the home when Stephen was just enjoying the quiet, right? And I started noticing, so I call them sound baths, but one of the best things that I have coached people and shared with people, and I'm not a psychologist, but I am a coach for, you know, a variety of professions and different things. And one of the most effective things that I've seen are 10-minute sound baths every day, where you just, whether you're sitting in your car, you're sitting on the patio, you're sitting some space where you're just doing nothing, and you're literally listening to the air. You're listening to quiet. And you can even set a timer, because for some reason, when we set a timer, we can relax into an experience better than if we're trying to watch the clock, because then we're still alert. And so sound baths are one of the best things that I have found for self-care, because for 10 minutes, and this is a little similar to kind of what we talked about at the beginning, but try it. Like today, before you go to bed, go somewhere and have it be a pleasant somewhere and a safe somewhere, right? Maybe not your closet, you know? But where you're giving yourself permission to listen to the air. And there's just something, and you're just noting, and if a car goes by or you hear a dog barking off in the distance, you know, some might call this mindfulness. For me, it's not even that. I'm just listening to the air. And when I do this, I'm telling my body, my very being, I have the right to take care of me. And right now, I'm dropping everything else. No demands, nothing. I am taking self-care. And it is just one of the most exquisite things. And then if you just start doing this as a daily practice, the other things start falling away like dried up scabs, the stress, the negative self-talk. There's so many reasons why, which we don't have time right now to talk about. But So those two things, a success journal, super simple, one sentence a night, something that you did well that day. And then the sound baths, if you can do that, even if it's just 5 minutes, but it's so yummy, I promise, you'll be like, I'm doing 10 minutes. So I have found those two things are can be really simple, easy, nearly free, if not free, and yummy. Super good.
I love that. Something that has always kind of, before pre-pandemic, has always annoyed me is when people would, like, talk about social media and how they're always, oh, I just can't control myself on social media, like all of that kind of frou-frou stuff. But then the pandemic happened, and then I was always on my phone, and and I was looking at the news, I was all of the stuff. And so I love that, taking the 10-minute break of not looking at anything, because I've definitely gotten addicted to not having, I mean, to just doing something. And so yes. I think that's super powerful, and it's something I'm going to try. So that's cool.
Yes, yes. I think we all can relate, Andrew.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your podcasts. You recently just started the Nightingale Project, and when you explained it on social media, I just loved the idea behind it. Will you kind of express what the podcasts are about?
Yes. So the one that I most recently launched, and super excited because it internationally ranked around the globe. And my whole point in that one, it's called the Business Nightingale Project. And the point is to bring uplift to discouraged souls. And I'll share a little bit more, but Florence Nightingale, many people have heard of her. She was a nurse she was a woman who was providing care in the middle of the night to soldiers who had been wounded out on the battlefield. And she is attributed with standardizing nursing care. Hmm. So in the nursing world, Florence Nightingale has been a really valuable person to look to, both for the empathy that underlines everything in a nursing practice, and also in standardizing, here are best practices, right? So the Business Nightingale Project started because I became very concerned about the amount of suicides since, especially the shutdown. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurs and musicians are entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. right? And so many other individuals who are seeking to fulfill their purposes, follow their passions, and put bread on the table for their babies. Those are valiant individuals. And any individual who is trying to do that is an individual with a golden heart. Well, golden-hearted people often tend to feel things more deeply, right? And so my concern is, and research is showing that entrepreneurs tend to feel depression and discouragement more frequently for so many different reasons. And so during this time and continuing forward, I have been bringing together international guests who also have forged out on their own, like musicians do, or artists, or ballerinas, or anybody that's going to be an independent and bringing their gifts to the world. Or it might be an entrepreneur that is working online digital businesses, whatever it might be, and bringing together individuals who have struggled, who have lost everything, and yet who have found ways to triumph even in the midst of the pandemic. So that's called the Business Nightingale Project, and it is on iTunes and in other areas. The Concussion podcast is called Concussion, There is Hope. My concern and why I started that one about a year ago or so is because most parents aren't aware that when a child has a head injury between the ages of 0 to 5, later in their teen years, the risk of suicide is supremely high, self-injury, etc. Also, many individuals do not know that if they've sustained a head injury within the first 2 years, their risk of depression and or suicide ideation go up 3 to 8-fold. And so that podcast is to help people who have had head injuries find help and hope so that they can continue on. And the final thought is, this has to do with marriage counseling, because my husband's a marriage counselor, but they did a study with partners who were looking at divorce. And all the study looked at was, will you wait 5 years? That was it. Will you wait 5 years? And so the individuals that they followed said yes. And what the study found, surprisingly, was that how resilient people are. And what they found was that these couples on average were happier than the average couple, simply because they had given it time. So my desire is to help people learn we can give life time and the fruit will come. And I, just because I'm feeling even suicidal today, does not mean that next month I'll be feeling the same way. And if I can get resources and help and hang in there, my life's going to get better. And last thought. So I did summer stock theater a number of years ago, and our drummer was a 16-year-old-ish young man, and had shared with me through a letter or through a note that he was contemplating taking his life. And I was a young college student. I didn't know how to handle this, but this is a delightful person. So I called my father, and then he advised me to call the hospital, and then the hospital put me in touch with a psychologist, and so that we could provide help for this fantastically talented individual. He got the help. I saw him a number of years later, a few years after that, maybe 2-3 years. And he talked with me and said how happy he was, that he had a girlfriend, and things were so much different. So both of these podcasts are intended to help people know that just because things look dire now, a month from now, 3 months from now, 3 years from now, things can be so much better. So yes, Concussion, There Is Hope, and the Business Nightingale Project.
That's cool.
Are you familiar? I mean, there are characteristics that relate to our cognitive development that cause these types of reactions. Are you, like, do you know off the top of your head, because I know, like, with teenagers, their ability to see, you know, 5 years down the road is much more impaired than perhaps in adults. Are you familiar with what those statistics are that you'd be able to share? Or I'm sorry for putting you on the spot with that. It just made me think of it.
That's okay. And what you're talking about is valid, because there was another study done a number of years ago where they worked with 6-year-olds, 16-year-olds, and 26-year-olds. And they showed them, essentially, it was this huge outcropping of a rock, something like this. It's been a while since I read the study, but, the 6-year-olds were totally game for jumping off of it. They would have died. They would have died. Right? But oh, that looked fun.
Right.
The 16-year-olds were not interested in, they could tell the risk, but because of peer pressure, if their friends were saying, oh, do this, dude, this is going to be cool, they would have jumped. Even though they were starting to sense danger and risk, but where there was peer pressure, there were a number that were willing to jump. The 26-year-olds shown the scenario. We're like, are you kidding? You know what? So yes, we have these developing minds. And one of the saddest things to me that I have read was the suicides from 7-year-olds to 10-year-olds in this pandemic. So for youth, especially in these moments of crisis, they need adults that are armed with information, that are that can provide the help. And there are professionals that can be brought in. And it is not a conflagration, but you have so many different things happening. You have externals where these young people are feeling there is no hope. When is this ever going to change? But especially, I don't have the tools to know how to deal with this. And I don't even recognize that I don't have the tools. That's the Johari window moment, right? But the adults might not have the tools. Then on top of that, which is why we need the experts that would provide the counseling, et cetera, but you also have dietary influence on the brain. And you have chemistry that may be inherited. So it is not a simple thing, but the more there are people in the world who can provide resources or, you know, a suicide hotline, which I can get you that information. You can put it in your show notes. Mm-hmm. Different kinds of resources that we can pull together. We can save more lives so that, like, this one fantastic individual, several years later, was very happy. Mm-hmm. Things had changed because he had gotten the resources that he needed. So yes, mm-hmm. exactly. The younger need more help.
It's amazing to me, having gone through some anxiety and stress and depression, why yes. it's not taught in school. I mean, like you said, the rates for the children are so high. It's just something that's very special to me now that I think should be discussed yes. and stuff. So
I feel like the core curriculums of public education should include a couple things.
Yeah.
Like financial lessons right. and
yeah,
lots emotional of, yeah. and yeah.
There's lots of gaps.
Well, and what's
for sure.
what's interesting and exciting is the podcast world is mm-hmm. opening up with podcasts for youth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is super exciting. And I will share this briefly. So I've had a series of concussions and I was astonished. And this is what caused me to start researching suicide is that about 7 days after the serious head injury that I had in April of 2018, I don't know how else to describe this, but it was like I was seized upon by this intense need to just be done with life, to take my life. And it lasted for about 3 hours.
Wow.
And I call it my irrational rationality because it seemed so rational that the planet would be better if I weren't here. And it occurred because of the head injury. After about 3 hours, it completely lifted. I don't live with that. But then as I had several more head injuries, because mm-hmm. it takes less and less impact to cause greater and greater concussion or concussive kind of symptoms, with every single one of those head injuries, with the exception of one, about 7 days after the injury, and it can be up to 2 years, mm-hmm. but for me, for some reason, it would be several hours of just this cacophony of chemistry inside my brain that I then started recognizing. So I was able to hang on. I was able to tell people, you know, I called my sister and I said to my sister, I'm recognizing what's going on. I'm recognizing this is not rational, but right now it's feeling really rational. Will you talk with me until I can make it through this chemistry stuff that's going on? And fortunately for me, I don't live with that, but it has shown me how seductive it is. And so if there's anybody listening right now, anybody that has bought into the lie that you are not needed, it is not true. And there are resources, and I promise, and we will put this in the show notes, I promise that there are resources, but the fastest resource is to contact somebody and say, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. I'm not broken. I'm a good person, but right now I'm believing this lie that the world would be better without me. Will you just talk me through this? Mm-hmm. And it will make all the difference in the world. So that's why I became super passionate. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a podcast to help concussion survivors because I get this now. I wouldn't have gotten it before. And then with business professionals, with suicides going up with all these lockdowns, mm-hmm. oh my goodness, let's mm-hmm. just give you some time so that 3 years from now, things are better.
Mm-hmm. Jaw surgery actually has an expected depression period after wow. you have jaw surgery. So I would be interested to see how many other medical surgeries and procedures mm-hmm. have a period of that. I have a very good friend who is a jaw surgeon, and it's part of pre-operation with him to discuss with his clients
wow.
depression. And, you know, this is when you expect to see the symptoms and this is what you need to do. And like, you just don't go through jaw surgery without having it. So yeah.
Super good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool. Well, we have two final questions for you to wrap up. Do you want to ask the first one?
Sure. Angela? I find it very interesting and centering, I guess, when I speak to people who have accomplished so many great things in their lives, to ask them what they consider their greatest accomplishment, because, it kind of helps us keep ourselves centered in what is truly important. So that's my question for you. What do you consider to be your greatest accomplishment?
This reminds me of a story that actually it was in my husband's master's that he learned of this experience, true experience. There was a CEO of a very large corporation that talked one time about his, I don't know if it was his bachelor's or his master's or what, but for the exam, this super tough professor. And at the end of the semester, they're all expecting a really crazy hard final. You may know this story, I don't know. And so they all show up and they've studied. And there was, from what I understand, one question on the final. And it was this: what is the name of the cleaning lady of this building? So the individuals that actually knew that name got an A on the final and the others got an F. Mm-hmm. And this CEO talked about how landmark that was for him. After all of these other accomplishments, it changed his life. He got a B in that class. He was a straight A student. He got a B because he got an F on the final because he didn't know her name. He found it out. It was Dottie. You can look this story up on the web and find out who it was and whatever. But to me, that is the greatest accomplishment. When you see the humanity of people. In communications, there's a term called artifacts. And we, you know, as archaeologists, we're not archaeologists, but archaeologists, they look at artifacts, right? Yeah. They look at artifacts and they piece together somebody's life. Well, we don't realize we do that to each other. Mm-hmm. We look at somebody that they might have gauges or they might have scraggly teeth, like their teeth are all crooked or, you know, whatever it is, or the kind of car that they drive. These are artifacts that we don't realize that we're putting together. We're drawing dot to dots that are probably not correct. But from those artifacts, we don't realize we're being archaeologists and we're telling ourselves stories about people merely by their appearance. And so to me, the greatest accomplishment I could have in my life, and that I do try every day, like if I go through a fast food place, drive through, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody does a really good job, you can ask my kids. I'm always like, can I talk to your manager? I want to pass on a compliment about you. Every place I go, whether it's on a telephone call and somebody's helped me, if they're the just 2% nice, I'm trying to find something, right? I will always say, can I talk to your manager? You have done a very good job, because there's so little affirmation of each other in our world today. And that's what I'm hoping, just to close. We started off talking about 2020 and moving into 2021. And I'm hoping that the difficulties of 2020 will inform our behavior towards one another in 2021. And no matter the artifacts, it doesn't matter the race or the political affiliation or anything that's going on, could there be a better accomplishment in life than to say, I knew the Dotties of the world and I made their days better?
That's cool.
Thank you.
So finally, what are some tools that you would advise musicians to put in their toolbox?
Oh, yes. Okay. So I had a music studio for a long time, taught a variety of instruments. I love music. I just literally, like, I remember when I got my first banjo. It was during a time when I could do this, but I was playing 4 to 6 hours a day. I just was like, I can't get enough, you know? And because I had some ancestor that came up through the oak of, you know, like the hills of Tennessee and, you know, whatever. So I was just super excited to have a banjo. So many of my music students, I would say, it's not practice that makes perfect. And you know this phrase, I know it because you're musicians. It's perfect practice, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That makes perfect, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the greatest tools that I have found that is really under the umbrella of mindset is joy seeking. Do we really want to get to the end of life having even achieved all of our goals, but we are dull and flat inside? I really believe that we were created to experience joy. And so as we're going through the motions of the day and the emotions of the day, how much of the day is joyful? Because each day is like a pearl on a pearl necklace. We're stringing day after day after day. And at the end of 1 year and 10 years and 20 years, have those pearls been pearls of joy? Now, when you think about what a pearl is and how it's coating upon coating upon coating in an oyster shell and all of that, right? Have I lacquered my life? Have I created these daily lacquers of joyful moments? So I remember being a music major, and I remember going to practice, and I remember sometimes just you feel that, and I'm sure you've felt it. It's like this symbiotic moment where the moment has just breathed, right? As you become one with that moment of music, or maybe with the ensemble that you're playing with, whatever it might be. So the tool that I would recommend is to become a really good detective on what are the joy thieves in your day. So like, and I remember doing summer stock theater, 102 nights in a row, professional theater, right? And we get to the 51st night, and the director's like, he's calling everybody on the carpet for complaining and grumbling and moaning. And he's like, you guys are all music, dance, you know, major, vocal majors. Why are you complaining? This is your work. What are you, you know, thinking you're going to do if this is what you're planning on doing as a career and you're complaining about your schedule? So the tool to me that is one of the greatest tools in a musician toolbox is, do I know how to find joy in each day? And if not, let me go study this. Let me talk to people who know how to find joy. It is wrong to think every moment of every day is going to be pleasant. But it is not wrong to think that even in those unpleasant moments, I can find peace. I can find joy. And to me, that is the journey of a lifetime, to discover how you do that and then share it with others. And I think that's the benefit of your podcast, because as people are listening, they're picking up jewel here and a jewel here. And how do I find joy in my daily endeavors? Or am I grumbling and mumbling and complaining? And if so, I'm thieving myself of joy. So there's a lot of tools. But if you don't have the tool of understanding how do I find joy, which we're all understanding and learning and developing, what good are the rest?
What a great way to end the interview. Thanks for all your insights.
Thank you.
If there's any place, will you share the places where our listeners can find more about what you're doing?
Yes. So they can go to iTunes or any of the podcast individual or places, and Concussion, There Is Hope, and also the Business Nightingale Project. Yes.
Great. Well, thank you again. We enjoyed speaking with you today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You all are wonderful.
What a great interview. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and we truly hope that you have found some tools to put in your toolbox.
Our podcast, as a reminder, can be found on various platforms as well as on YouTube.
Once again, feel free to send us a DM or voice message with anything that you'd like to see in the future.
We often post announcements and upcoming guests on our social media, so if that's interesting to you, you should go and give us a follow.
Yeah, we would love some follows. And lastly, while we do love doing this for free, podcasting is not free. So if you really like what we're doing and have gained some value from our show, there are a few ways that you can support us.
You could share with your friends.
You could rate and review.
And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
You could also shop our merch, which you might have seen in our YouTube videos, or become a supporter through a donation at the Anchor Podcast link in the show notes below.
Thanks for watching.
See you later.